Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Michael Palin, Sasha Mitchell, and Peter Moser.
Poetry, glues us all together. Poetry wears dynamite shoes. Poetry is the spittle on the mirror. Poetry wears nothing but the blues.
It's the gumboil gargoyle that falls off the cathedral to land on the crown of the queen.
Grab it while you can, it's the magical needle. It's the bit of 16 and its flesh is bright green. Poetry glues us all together. Poetry wears dynamite shoes. Poetry is the spittle on the mirror. Poetry wears nothing but the blues.
Poetry's a lion on the stage of the opera house, doing it ill, jamming with his brothers and sisters.
Hits you, slits you, almost never fits you. You and your lover get covered in blisters. Poetry glues us all together. Poetry wears dynamite shoes.
Poetry is the spittle on the mirror.
Poetry wears nothing but the blues.
Poetry's the moon's own bottle of gin. It's the purple ghost of Duke Ellington's band.
It's a bucket with a hole for collecting the truth in. It's the legless beggar army of Disneyland.
Teresa hasn't got it, but there's plenty in Jezza. Slap your sherry trifle on my sewing machine.
Bend it into bowlines, you'll never break it. The only way to make it is the way that you make it. The only way to
that matters is the way that you shake it.
Poetry glues us all together. Poetry wears dynamite shoes.
Poetry is the spittle on the mirror.
Poetry wears nothing but the blues.
This is called The Wilder Poetry of Tomorrow. Come on, poetry, get up off your big, fat, rusty, dusty. Come on, poetry, get up off your big, fat, rusty, dusty. When you crawled home at dawn, your breath was smelling mausoleum musty. You've been mooning round the boneyard, mumbling to the dead, playing Ludo against yourself and wearing gloves in bed. Why don't you swing up through the treetops, get some jungle in your head? I want every kind of creature to break out of the poetry zoo. Barefoot heartbeat of the elephant, stride of the kangaroo. I want to see your body naked when the sun comes shining through. It can knock you down in Devon. It can bust you up in Jarrow. It bumps across the landscape like a customised wheelbarrow. But the wilder poetry of tomorrow, it strikes like Robin Hood's arrow. So come on, poetry, get up off your big, fat, rusty, dusty.
This next song came about when Adrian saw the first photographs of the Earth sent back from space. Some of you might remember that. Anybody remember that?
When man first flew beyond the sky, yeah, when man first flew beyond the sky, he looked back into the world's blue eye. He looked back into the world's blue eye.
Man said, what makes your eyes so blue? Man said, what makes your eyes so blue? Earth said, the tears in the oceans do. Earth said, the tears in the oceans do.
Why are the seas so full of tears? Yeah, why are the seas so full of tears?
Because I've wept so many thousand years. Because I've wept so many thousand years.
Why do you weep as you dance through space? Why do you weep as you dance through space?
Because I am the mother of the human race. Because I am the mother of the human race.
Now, this next poem is called Stufferation and actually needs your help here because there are a series of riddles, and if you get the answer to the riddle, shout it out. So we'll just try with the first verse here. Lovers lie around in it, broken glass is found in it. Grass. I like that stuff. Good. Well, now that we're going to do that again, and then we're going to go on to some of the others. And some of them are very, very difficult, but you're Ledburians and you'll get them dead easily. Okay, so let's have a go at stufferation. Lovers lie around in it. Broken glass is found in it. Grass. I like that stuff. Tuna fish get trapped in it. Legs come wrapped in it. Nylon, very good. You've read this before. Nylon, I like that stuff. Eskimos and tramps chew it. Madame Tussaud gave status to it. Wax, I like that stuff. Elephants get sprayed with it. Scotch is made with it. Water, getting it right. I like that stuff. Clergy are dumbfounded by it. Bones are surrounded by it. Flesh, I like that stuff. Harps are strung with it. Mattresses are sprung with it. Wire. I like that stuff. Let's do that again because I love that one. Clergy are dumbfounded by it. Bones are surrounded by it. I like that stuff. Harps are strung with it. Mattresses are sprung with it. Wire. I like that stuff. Carpenters make cots of it. Undertakers use lots of it. Wood. I like that stuff. Dirty cigarettes are lit by it. Pensioners get happy when they sit by it. Fire. I like that stuff. Johnny Dankworth's alto is made of it, most of it. Scooby-Doo is composed of it. What shouldn't be in the sea that's floating around? Plastic. Johnny Dankworth's alto is made of it, most of it. Scooby-Doo is composed of it. Plastic. I like that stuff. Elvis kept it in his left-hand pocket. Little Richard made it zoom like a rocket. Rock and roll. Oh, my soul. I like that stuff. Ape men take it to make them hairier. I ate a ton of it in Bulgaria. Yogurt. Yes. Oh, thank you. We must work together again. I like that. Lovely. I like that stuff. Man-made fibres and raw materials, old world gold and breakfast cereals, platinum, linoleum, I like that stuff. Skin on my hands, hair on my head, toenails on my feet, and linen on the bed. Well, I like that stuff, yes. I like that stuff. The earth is made of earth. I like that stuff. Now, a more serious vein, something he was very passionate about and something which I think people are still right to be passionate about. This is called Cutting It Up. If you're looking for trouble, here's how to start. Blow up the theatres, tear down the art. Burn down the libraries and concert halls. Cut your jazz and ballet and then cut off your balls. And be a serial killer of culture, a serial killer of the soul. If you're looking for trouble, take the artists you've got, stack their works all around them and torch the lot. The human soul is hungry, and so's the human heart. The food and drink makes them feel and think. It comes from works of art. And the human soul without art is locked in a dungeon cell. If you take your knife and cut the arts, you can cut your throat as well, because you're a serial killer of culture, a serial killer of the soul. If you're looking for trouble, cut your grants to the poor. Seek out the old and sick, cut them some more. Suffer little children to go to school in hell, then watch them burn your cities and your country estates as well. Because you're a serial killer of Britain, a serial killer of its soul.
I first met Adrian working for an amazing theatre company called Welfare State International. We toured all over the place making shows, and I met him actually first in Barrow in Furness. Anybody ever been to Barrow in Furness? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I now live the other side of Barrow. I'm in Morecambe, the other side of Morecambe Bay. So I met him and we did a show called King Real and the Hoodlums. Which was a community film based on King Lear. King Lear? Can you see that? Welfare State were extraordinary theatre company, used to do big spectacles and kind of invented a lot of the community theatre practice that now you see all over the country. They were civic magicians, pathological optimists, engineers of the imagination. And those are all the things I think Adrian really loved. And in 1995, we raised the Titanic in Limehouse Basin for the Lift Festival every night for 5 nights. A huge scaffolding and structure. And we wrote a song, we wrote loads of music, and this one was a great lyric. It shows that you can make lyrics out of just about anything, including statistics.
She's fine, 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 they call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She's fine, 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 they call her the Titanic of the White Star Line.
She weighs
66,000 tons.
She weighs
66,000 tons.
She got
50,000 horsepower.
She got
50,000 horsepower, and she's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic or the White Star Line. She's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic or the White Star Line.
She got
24, 25 knots an hour.
She make
24, 25 knots an hour. And she's shoving black smoke at the overhead sun. 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 And she's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line.
She got
60-foot funnels, 3 million rivets, everything the human race could afford. 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 And she's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She got 2,207 people on board. 2,207 people on board. 2,207 people on board. 2,207 people on board. Wonder ship speeding to the meeting place. There stood the iceberg with a grin on its face. It opened the Titanic like a sardine tin, and the people fell out, and the water rushed in. And she's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line.
'Cause she's fine, fine, fine. They call her the Titanic of the White Star Line. She's fine.
Just a year later, I was working for Welfare State, and we put a band together called On the Loose. Sorting out my chair. Oh, actually, this is the moment I should thank for the piano, shouldn't I? Yes. So we arrived today and found that the piano that I sort of asked for piano, but it hadn't been very specific, and it wasn't right. So we searched around Ledbury and Ledbury Primary School. Anybody here connected with Ledbury Primary School? Any teachers? Anybody go to Ledbury Primary School? Probably not now. Well, we borrowed this piano from Ledbury Primary School. Wasn't that lovely of them? So, but I forgot to get the piano stool. Yes. Anyway, so to tell you the story, Adrian came up to write songs with the band, and one of the singers was called Doreen from Natal in South Africa. And he took stories from us all and turned them into songs. And this is a song called Blue Cotton, a story from Natal. She appeared at the crossroads with a clipboard in her hand. She stepped into the highway and held up her hand. My Fiat just managed a spectacular emergency stop. So I yelled at the woman, get the hell off the road or else you're gonna find you squashed like a toad. She wrote down my number as if she was some kind of cop. She wore blue cotton. She wore a blue cotton dress. She wore a blue cotton dress with a pattern of flowers. Blue cotton dress with a pattern of flowers. Pattern of 100 flowers. Pattern of 100 flowers. Blue cotton. Well, I parked at the corner and I watched from afar. Driver after driver had to pull up their cars, and she wrote down their numbers and dismissed them with a wave of her hand. She stands at that corner every empty day to wait, recording every number on each number plate in her search for the driver of the car that ran over her man. In the search for the driver of the car that ran over her man. She wore blue cotton. She wore blue cotton dress. She wore a blue cotton dress with a pattern of flowers. Blue cotton dress with a pattern of flowers. Pattern of 100 flowers. Pattern of 100 flowers. Blue cotton. Blue cotton. Cotton. She wore blue.
Two poems now which really show the range of Adrian's work, one mischievous, the other very passionate. And this first one is for all dog lovers in the audience. It's called A Puppy Called Puberty. It was like keeping a puppy in your underpants. A secret puppy you weren't allowed to show to anyone, not even your best friend or your worst enemy. You wanted to pat him, stroke him, cuddle him all the time, but you weren't supposed to touch him. He only slept for 5 minutes at a time. And he'd suddenly perk up his head in the middle of school medical inspection. And always on bus rides. So you had to climb down from the upper deck, all bent double, to smuggle the puppy off the bus without the buxom conductress spotting your wicked and ticketless stowaway. Jumping up, wet-nosed, eagerly wagging, he only stopped being a nuisance when you were alone together, pretending to be doing your homework, but really gazing at each other through hot and hazy daydreams of those beautiful schoolgirls on the bus with kittens bouncing in their sweaters. The doorbell. I was in bed, the silvery light of dawn blessing our quiet suburban street, when the window darkened and the doorbell rang. Pushed my face deep in the pillow, but the doorbell kept ringing, and there was another sound, like the crying of a siren. So I slopped downstairs, unbolted, unlocked, unchained, and opened the front door. There on the doorstep stood the wall. It filled my front garden, filled the entire street and blotted out the sky. It was human and monstrous, sleepless, shapeless, enormous, with torn and poisoned skin which bled streams of yellow, red and black. The war had many millions of heads, both dead and half alive, some moaning, some screaming, some whispering in every language known on earth. Goodbye, my love. The war had millions of eyes and all wept tears of molten steel. Then the war spoke to me in a voice of bombs and gunfire. I am your war. Can I come in?
The next poem was inspired because Dad particularly liked stories about desert islands and castaways. And he loved Man Friday, which was a play he wrote, which was Robinson Crusoe the other way round, through the eyes of Man Friday. And he also loved Jules Verne.
The Castaways, or Vote for Caliban. The Pacific Ocean, a blue demi-globe, islands like punctuation marks. A cruising airliner, passengers unwrapping pats of butter. A hurricane arises, tosses the plane into the sea. Five of them, flung onto an island beach, survived. Tom, the reporter, Susan, the botanist, Jim, the high jump champion, Bill, the carpenter, Mary, the eccentric widow. Tom, the reporter, sniffed out a stream of drinkable water. Susan, the botanist, identified a banana tree. Jim, the high jump champion, jumped up and down and gave them each a bunch. Bill, the carpenter, knocked up a table for their banana supper. Mary, the eccentric widow, buried the banana skins, but only after they'd asked her twice. They all gathered sticks and lit a fire. There was an incredible sunset. Next morning, they held a committee meeting. Tom, Susan, Jim and Bill voted to make the best of things. Mary, the eccentric widow, abstained. Tom, the reporter, killed several dozen wild pigs. He tanned their skins into parchment and printed the Island News with the ink of squids. Susan, the botanist, developed new strains of banana, which tasted of chocolate, beefsteak, peanut butter, chicken, and boot polish. Jim, the high jump champion, organised games, which he always won easily. Bill, the carpenter, constructed a wooden water wheel and converted the water's energy into electricity. Using iron ore from the hills, he constructed lampposts. They all worried about Mary, the eccentric widow, her lack of confidence and her... Well, there wasn't time to coddle her. The volcano erupted, but they dug a trench and diverted the lava into the sea, where it formed a spectacular pier. They were attacked by pirates, but defeated them with bamboo bazookas, firing sea urchins packed with homemade nitroglycerine. They gave the cannibals a dose of their own medicine and survived an earthquake thanks to their skill in jumping. Tom had been a court reporter, so he became the magistrate and solved disputes. Susan, the botanist, established a university, which also served as a museum. Jim, the high jump champion, was put in charge of law enforcement, jumped on them when they were bad. Bill, the carpenter, built himself a church, preached there every Sunday. But Mary, the eccentric widow, each evening she wandered down the island's main street, past the Stock Exchange, the Houses of Parliament, the prison and the arsenal, past the Prospero souvenir shop, past the Robert Louis Stevenson movie studios, past the Daniel Defoe motel. She nervously wandered and sat on the end of the pier of lava, breathing heavily, as if at a loss, as if at a lover. She opened her eyes wide to the usual incredible sunset.
Adrian loved travelling. He did a lot of travelling. And poems often came out of those travels. And this one was written in Georgia. Anybody been to Georgia? A couple of people. So in Georgia, there is great poetry in Georgia. And there is an amazing tradition of poetry. And also a fantastic folkloric singing tradition. And he witnessed this. And one night at a party, he sat in a corner drinking red wine and wrote this. And there's one of the styles of this singing is a sort of competitive thing between the two solo singers. And I think this is sort of in that honour. How would you say?
In that spirit.
In that spirit.
The good old moon drank a bottle of wine and she began to sing.
The fine old tree drank a bottle of wine and it began to sing.
The warm black sea drank a bottle of wine and she began to sing.
The strange old bridge drank a bottle of wine and it began to sing.
The tattered little book drank a bottle of wine and it began to sing.
The dog with one ear drank a bottle of wine and it began to sing.
And the child with a broken doll in her arms drank a breastful of milk. And she began to sing. For the love of Georgia, for the love of Georgia, a land with a heart as deep as that good old one.
vogue in Chile in 1973, Victor Jara, who was a singer-songwriter, was killed in the Santiago Stadium. He was murdered there. And his wife escaped to England with her two daughters, Manuela and Mandy, and they came to live with us, went to school with me. And Dad sat down and talked a lot to Joan about Victor's life and how he died, but also how he lived. And he wrote this as a poem, and then he set it to music to a tune that had already been written by Arlo Guthrie, but he thought, I'll send it to Arlo Guthrie. He sent it, and Arlo Guthrie wrote a whole new tune. And this is that song. Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star, and he fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Victor Jara was a peasant. He worked from a few years old. He sat upon his father's plow, and he watched the earth unfold. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. When the neighbors had a wedding, or one of their children died, his mother sang all night for them with Victor by her side. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He grew up to be a fighter against the people's wrongs. He listened to their grief and joy, and he turned them into songs. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He sang about the copper miners and those who worked the land. He sang about the factory workers, and they knew he was their man. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. He campaigned for Allende, working night and day. He sang, take hold of your brother's hand, the future begins today. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. And then the generals seized Chile. They arrested Victor then. They caged him in a stadium with 5,000 frightened men. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Victor stood in the stadium, his voice was brave and strong, and he sang for his fellow prisoners till the guards cut short his song. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. They broke the bones in both his hands. They beat his lovely head. They tore him with electric shocks, and then they shot him dead. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. And then the generals ruled Chile, and the British had their thanks, 'cause they ruled with hawker hunters, and they ruled with chieftain tanks. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong. Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star, and he fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. His hands were gentle, his hands were strong, his hands were gentle, his hands were strong.
And over many years, Adrian encouraged me to go to Chile to work. I do a lot of education work and work with young people. And in 1990, I got to Chile for 4 months and worked with Joan and her dance troupe and worked in some of the poblaciones in Santiago and in Concepción. And while working with the dance troupe one day, it was called Espiral. I wrote this tune, it's called Espiral.
Ten ways to avoid lending your wheelbarrow to anybody. One, patriotic. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? I didn't lay down my life in World War II so that you could borrow my wheelbarrow. Two, snobbish. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? Oh, unfortunately, Samuel Beckett's using it. Three, overweening. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? It is too mighty a conveyance to be wielded by any mortal save myself. Four, pious. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? Oh, my wheelbarrow is reserved for religious ceremonies. Five, melodramatic. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? I'd sooner be broken on its wheel and buried in its barrow. Six, pathetic. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? I'm dying of schizophrenia and all you can talk about is wheelbarrows. Seven, defensive. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? Do you think I'm made of wheelbarrows? Eight, sinister. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? It's full of blood. Nine, lecherous. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? Only if I can fuck your wife in it. 10, philosophical. May I borrow your wheelbarrow? What's a wheelbarrow?
The next poem was written a long time ago about Celia, my mother, and it's one of the first poems on the underground and was voted Britain's favourite loved poem, I think more than once or twice.
Celia, Celia. When I am sad and weary, when I think all hope has gone, when I walk along High Holborn, I think of you with nothing on. And this is probably another poem, probably from later in the relationship. September love poem. I flop into our bed with thee, Ovaltine and warm Milko. And there we lie in ecstasy, watching Sergeant Bilko. Goodbye. He breathed in air, he breathed out light. Charlie Parker was my delight. I was run over by the truth one day. Ever since the accident, I've walked this way. So stick my legs in plaster, tell me lies about Vietnam. Heard the alarm clock screaming with pain. Couldn't find myself, so went back to sleep again. So fill my ears with silver, stick my legs in plaster, tell me lies about Vietnam. Every time I shut my eyes, all I see is flames. I made a marble phone book and I carved all the names. So coat my eyes with butter, fill my ears with silver, stick my legs in plaster, tell me lies about Vietnam. I smell something burning. Hope it's just my brains. They're only dropping peppermints and daisy chains. So stuff my nose with garlic, coat my eyes with butter, fill my ears with silver, stick my legs in plaster, tell me lies about Vietnam. Where were you at the time of the crime? Down by the cenotaph, drinking slime. So chain my tongue with whiskey, stuff my nose with garlic, coat my eyes with butter, fill my ears with silver, stick my legs in plaster, tell me lies about Vietnam. You put your bombers in, you put your conscience out, you take the human being and you twist it all about. So scrub my skin with women, so chain my tongue with whiskey, stuff my nose with garlic, coat my eyes with butter, fill my ears with silver, stick my legs in plaster, tell me lies about Iraq, Burma, Afghanistan, BAE Systems, Israel, Iran. Tell me lies, Mr. Bush, Trump, Putin. Tell me lies, Mr. Blair, Brown, Cameron, Mrs. May. Tell me lies about Vietnam.
I would introduce this, but I can never remember the name of the show. So
he always gets it wrong. This show, this song is from a show called Mind Your Head, which was basically Hamlet on the buses, which was originally done in Liverpool, although it was about the 24 bus route in London. Hamlet was played by a very young Jonathan Pryce, just out of drama school, and the wicked Uncle Claude, the bus inspector, was played by Anthony Scher, also just out of drama school. And this was one of the favourite songs from Mind Your Head.
I was working for a farmer, but I answered him back. I got my wages on a Friday, plus the sack.
when I talked about the uni, and the farmer said to me,
"Don't you know what day this happens to be? It's Fuck Off Friday, that's the day I love, when all of the losers get the shove. I call it my day, I can't wait till when Fuck Off Friday rolls around again."
Used to do a bit of dancing, rock and roll. My fiancé chucked me 'cause I was on the dole. Went down for a handout to the DHSS, and the girl behind the counter said,
"You're a mess. It's Fuck Off Friday, that's the day I love, when all of the losers get the shove. I call it my day, I can't wait till when Fuck Off Friday comes around again."
So I joined the British Army for the regular pay. At least the British Army doesn't turn you away. I was walking through Helmand, got shot in the head. And as I lay dying, an angel said,
"It's Fuck Off Friday, that's the day I love, when all of the losers get the shove. I call it my day, I can't wait till when Fuck Off Friday rolls around again."
Well, the British Army sent me home in a coffin the next day, and my mother got an email from Mrs. May. But when she read her condolence note, she wrote her back a letter, and this is what she wrote.
"It's Fuck Off Friday, that's the day I love, when all of the Tories get the shove. I call it my day, I can't wait till when Fuck Off Friday comes to number 10. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
I want to hear you singing now. It's...
You know the words.
Fuck Off Friday, that's the day I love, when all of the Tories get the shove. I call it my day, I can't wait till when Fuck Off Friday comes to number 10.
Bravo.
The play's what I wrote, by Shakespeare. My name's William Shakespeare, best poet in Britain. These are the plays what I've written. I've mainly tried to use this system in the order I wrote them down to list them, with rhymes to help you learn their monikers. One of the first was Titus Andronicus. That was full of wild and gory terrors. I nixed the comedy, the errors, from a Plautus play about mixed-up twins. The audience liked it, so I begins a piece about lovers double-crossed, pessimistically named Love's Labour's Lost. A historical chronicle next I picks the first, second and third parts of Henry VI. I use all the wickedest tales that I've heard to celebrate villainous Richard III. Then I have a hit with The Taming of the Shrew about men and women and the nonsense they do. Most people remember Two Gentlemen of Verona for Crab the dog and Launce his owner. My History of England rolls on and on with one of my least popular plays, King John. But I quickly recover with my biggest hit yet, ever-loving Romeo and Juliet. Time for more histories, my director reckoned, so I nippily scribbles down Richard II, but tops it with Henry IV, parts 1 and 2, which introduces Falstaff and his crazy crew. Then lovers and fairies from the magical theme of my favourite A Midsummer Night's Dream. A flashback tale, The Merry Wives of Windsor, brings good old Falstaff back again, sir. Then The Uncomfortable Merchant of Venice, with Christian justice versus Jewish menace. War, make it feel great to be alive, is my main message in Henry V. Next, comical sex war sets the groundlings buzzing. Beatrix and Benedict, Much Ado About Nothing. Each new play is staged. They wouldn't dare spike it after my hit comedy, As You Like It. And I makes another romantic kill with Twelfth Night or What You Will. Then I tackle that famous geezer, London's favourite Roman, Julius Caesar. For good luck, I wear a magical amulet while I'm writing my masterpiece, Hamlet. Love will find a way in a nutshell. That's your all's well that ends well. Most of my lovers have ended up blesseder than the ill-fated Troilus and Cressida. There's ethical mayhem and illegal pleasure in the moral maze of my Measure for Measure. A human fiend Iago torments a fellow of simple nobility called Othello. But the greatest of my lines you'll hear in the heart-shaking tragedy of King Lear. While insane ambition and sudden death rule the bleak Scotland of Macbeth. Honest Timon of Athens comes to the belief that every man was born a thief. Mad, passionate love, etc., are practised by Antony and Cleopatra. The people are two-faced as the god Janus, but they're denounced by Coriolanus. Less easy to understand than these is the rambling fairy tale of Pericles. And I'd just been given a vat of good wine before starting work on Cymbeline. True love may suffer but cannot fail is the mixed moral of the Winter's Tale. My last play of all can't be called great, a mixed-up pageant, Henry VIII, but I'll end up by naming one of my best, magical, lyrical, The Tempest. And if anyone asks who composed this ritual, it was done without shame by Adrian Mitchell, who loves Shakespeare, best poet in Britain, and these are the plays what he has written.
Amazingly, you've all been such an attentive audience, obviously wanting to know the final score, that we've come to the end, actually. Amazingly.
I know.
But we've got a song that we want you all to learn now. We're all going to sing it together. And this was the last song in Mind Your Head. Dad loved Mary Lloyd, the singer. And luckily, this song has been done over and over again. And last year was performed in Wilton's Music Hall, where it really needs to be. So this is Mary Lloyd. Mary Lloyd was warm as kettles and as frank as celluloid, and her words could sting like nettles or caress like Mary Lloyd.
Mary Lloyd, come back and warm us. Mary Lloyd, return to us. For your heart was as enormous as a double-decker bus.
She had eyes like Dylan Thomas and the wit of Nybervan. Mary Lloyd was taken from us. Send her back to Socor Man.
Mary Lloyd, come back and warm us. Mary Lloyd, return to us.
For your heart.
For your heart was as enormous as a double-decker bus.
Like a farted interrupt of a speech by Sigmund Freud, like Mount Etna in eruption, is the heart of Mary Lloyd.
Mary Lloyd, come back and warm us. Mary Lloyd, return to us. For your heart is as enormous as a double deck.
One more time!
Mary Lloyd, come back and and warm.
Let me hear you.
Mary Lloyd, return to
your beautiful
us,
voices in Lebrey.
For your heart is as enormous.